Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to our show. I'm Stephen Long, author of the novel There's a Somebody, and I would love to hear from you either on my website, stephenwlong.com, or the Facebook page, There's a Somebody. And I'm this is going to be a little bit self-serving today. I'm sort of new at this interviewing stuff, but I have a guest who's a longtime interviewer. Linda Philippi is host of the show Arts Alive, and so I'm going to pick her brain a little bit. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Steve.
Hi. So you and I met, I think, through Arts Alive, but you're certainly active in other ways in the town, which we'll get into. But I wanted to ask you, how long have you been doing the show?
This is our 16th season, so I think we started in 1997.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
When you say 1997, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but 16
I know.
Years. Yeah.
But when you start adding them up, there they are.
That's what happens when you don't quit.
Exactly.
Yeah, so how did this start? Tell us about the show and your involvement, and did you take over for somebody? Did you initiate it? How did that happen?
Well, I'll tell you. I was on the board of the Arts Alliance of Yamhill County, which is an umbrella arts organization designed to foster communication and, you know, kind of a serve as a bridge between the community and the artists who live and work in the community. And one of our board members, Frank Nelson, who is a retired Linfield College professor, he had a show that he was doing on a local public access station called Speaking Frankly, and interviewing, you know, more political or, I don't know, community issue type things. And he came to a board meeting and he said, you know, I really believe that what we need is a show that would promote the arts and artists. And I even have a name for it. We can call it Arts Alive. So great.
Okay.
Great. So then he said, but what we need is we're going to need a host for this show. And he said, who would like to host the show? Well, the first thing I thought of is, oh, my gosh, I would love to host this show. But I literally sat on my hands. Because I didn't want to be the one, you know, putting my hand up, oh, teacher, pick me.
Yeah.
So I waited and I waited and I waited. And finally he looked around the room and he had this sort of disappointed look and he said, is nobody willing to step up and host this show? And I said, I would love to host this show. And so that's kind of how it came to be from the beginning. You know, I couldn't imagine anything more fun, and I couldn't imagine why everybody else in the room wasn't clamoring to do it. So
right.
that's kind of how it came to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. So I was thinking, you know, an equivalent might be Jack Parr or something, the original,
yeah.
The original host. Well, clearly you like it, and clearly you're good at it, but do you think it was just an affinity? I mean, did you take journalism in school? Did you have any training, or you just jumped in there and said, I can do this?
You know, this is really funny, because when I was a kid, what I really wanted to be was a radio disc jockey. I love radio. I've always loved radio. It was really my passion, and when I began going to college, you know, the first few classes I took were journalism classes, and, I mean, we're talking the 70s, mind you. Because I really wanted to do that, and then, you know, one thing and another, life intervened, and I actually spent about 30 years as a florist, a floral designer, believe it or not. So the journalism career went out the window, the radio career went out the window, and I think, you know, when this opportunity came along, I'm really not, I mean, I don't consider myself a working artist by any means. I do have, obviously, some artistic capabilities because of the floral design, which I absolutely loved. But I thought this was a way that I could really connect with artists. And, you know, artists in general tend to be sort of introspective people who, you know, the introverted types. They don't really like to put themselves out there. They don't like to promote themselves. And yet, if you are, in fact, an artist, what you need more than anything is you need to be promoted. So I thought this would be a way for people to have, you know, kind of a a low-key way, sort of non-threatening way to just come on and have a little simple conversation and let the larger community kind of learn about who they are and what they do and see some examples of their work and possibly serve as a vehicle for, you know, ultimately some marketing and some promotion.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many parallels. Again, I've been doing this just a short time, but my sentiment is very similar. I love to listen to radio, and I've mm-hmm. always thought it would be fun to do. So mm-hmm. here, ironically, I got a chance to do it. But what I'm thinking, too, is that this is on the Internet. I mean, you could be in Siberia and listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
But we are in McMinnville, Oregon.
Center of the known universe.
Yeah, that's right. As self-defined.
Exactly. That's my definition.
Sure. Well, it has you and me, so.
Exactly.
But, you know, I came from Southern California, which has its own energy and so on.
Mm-hmm.
My life was different there, and so maybe this reflects more or says more about me than it does about the area. But I didn't see the kind of community involvement and the art production like I see here. And this is a little town. We're kind of 30,000 people, and there are several terrific artists in various media, and there's just more going on in the art world than I would have thought possible. And
you know,
and
it's really true.
You see most of them. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I moved here 27 years ago in 1987 from the Bay Area. And so, you know, I mean, there's so much culture going on, art and music and live theater and all different kinds of things there. But and when I came here, you know, this was a small community, and it really wasn't, I wouldn't say the artist colony or enclave that it is today, but it was mm-hmm. sort of a magnet because of, you know, the natural beauty of the area. You know, I think that the burgeoning wine industry has had a lot to do with, you know, bringing creative people in and just sort of fostering an overall climate of it's a fabulous place to live and work. And one of the things I think about, too, is, you know, it's difficult for people to get together when the physical distance or the logistics of getting together,
mm-hmm.
for example, Southern California, if you have to drive 2 hours, you know, to get across town or something to see somebody, you're much less likely to do it. You're going to say, God, it's too much of a hassle, and you're going to blow it off. But if you
mm-hmm.
live in a small community when, you know, you can easily get across our county in 20 minutes, 30 minutes tops, you'd say, hey, you know, I could travel 15 or 20 miles to attend that meeting or to see that art opening. It's absolutely doable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of, you know, what makes such a wonderful community. And when there are fewer people, it's easier to build those deep connections faster. So maybe you feel more engaged and more connected sooner as a newcomer or as a person who lives here.
Sure. Well, I think you've really hit on something. It's crossed my mind in the past. Or the question has crossed my mind, why McMinnville? And the reason that I think that is sort of in commercial terms.
Mm-hmm.
I know several artists, and there is a kind of a ubiquitous complaint about it's hard to sell your art. It's hard to make
money
doing it.
Oh, right, absolutely.
Now, maybe it is anywhere, but I suspect if you're in New York or San Francisco or something, you know, there's going to be more of a market. And so given that we all have to eat, I mean, making art is fun, but you still need to pay the rent. Again, why here? Well, I think you kind of hit on it. You know, it's a real nurturing society or community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, our little community theater here is
oh, sure.
active, and they're so much fun. The fine arts are flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some writers around here. You know, I interviewed both Anna Kesey and Joe Wilkins
mm-hmm.
here recently,
mm-hmm.
and Frank, you know, Frank Lisiandro
mm-hmm.
is coming up here real soon. I'm hoping in early February, and Frank has his book about Jim Morrison coming out.
Oh, wonderful!
And I think you probably know his connection, but. In any case, there's just yeah, it's just so wonderful. And let me say this: when I'm, or before we moved up here, I was pretty dissatisfied with where I was living. Southern California was just a mecca in the 60s, and when I was a kid there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where else would you want to be?
Right.
Surfing in cars and,
sure,
you know, all that stuff. But it got to be so congested, at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was thinking about some place to go to, at some point it struck me I wasn't so much looking for a different area as a different time. And, you know, you can change locations, but you don't have a time machine. When I came to Little McMinnville, I thought, you know what, maybe you can. It's kind of like that.
Right.
It's a little bit slower, certainly smaller. And so I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously you do too.
Well, you know, and it's true, and I'll tell you that when I first moved here, I was working over in Aurora, which is, you know, closer to the I-5 corridor or whatever, and looking for a place to live, and people, you know, suggested different towns. Well, my husband at the time had the time to drive around and look at communities, and he came back one evening, and he said, I found it, Linda. I said, what? He goes, it's McMinnville. And I said, where's that exactly? And he goes, oh, it's about 40 minutes away. And I said, wow, you know, and so we took a drive, and I said, why do you like it? And this is exactly what he told me. He grew up in Gilroy, California, home of the Gilroy Garlic Festival, but in the,
sure,
you know, the 60s and 70s when it was a small town. And he said, this reminds me of Gilroy the way it used to be when I was a kid. You know, and then we drove into town, and I saw Linfield College, you know,
mm-hmm,
and that little quintessential, you know, ivy-covered brick walls, but not huge, you know. You're not talking Harvard or something like,
right,
that. You're talking this small campus of, you know, 1,500 students, but with the oak trees, and it was so beautiful. It was so picturesque. It was like Mayberry RFD, and, you know, my children,
exactly,
were really young at the time. My,
yeah,
son was just,
sure,
getting ready to start kindergarten. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is exactly where I want to live. And, you know, I've never looked back. I absolutely love it here. It's a fabulous place to live. Yeah.
It is. Before the show started, you and I were talking about the weather today. And
mm-hmm,
it is a little chilly.
Mm-hmm,
but,
a little, yeah.
You know, on balance, I'm like you. I just I just wouldn't really want to be anywhere else.
Mm-mm, no.
But let me get back to your TV show. I think,
sure, you bet.
You know, one of the things that interested me, again, because I'm fairly new at this, is lining up guests and thinking, you know, at some point I'm going to run out of people to talk to. You've never done that. And I just wondered, do you have like a producer, or do you do it yourself? How
you know,
do you
this
continue?
It's so interesting that you're saying this right now to me, because I have kind of been the main mover and shaker of this show for 16 years, and have had, you know, various camera help off and on over the years, and directors have come and gone. Mike Santinay, who is in fact himself a working artist here in Yamhill,
sure,
County, has been instrumental in, over the years, acting as producer from time to time and helping me line up guests. He's also a very creative filmmaker, documentary filmmaker in his own right. He has a company called Meadow Lake Studios. But,
mm-hmm,
Steve, really, it's true, because I guess, you know, you've sort of hit on it, is that when you're dealing with artists, you know, they're sort of like, it's coaxing like a little shy turtle to poke his head out of the shell and say, come on out, it's safe, come out and play with me, and I'll give you a rose petal to nibble on. And sometimes that's very,
mm-hmm,
difficult. You want to really try to be able to interview everybody who's doing something creative and interesting. And some people are very, very willing to come on, and will do it, you know, every year or so when they have new work. And some,
mm-hmm,
people, I'm still trying after 16 years, I'm still trying to coax them onto the show. So,
mm-hmm,
yes, my sympathies are with you, because it's not like you're trying to book celebrities who are all about self-promotion and,
sure,
You know, it's sometimes the most creative, talented people are just extraordinarily shy. So, yeah, it's one of those things where you try to, oh gosh, how would I put it? You try to sell the benefit
mm-hmm.
and minimize the painful aspects of having to open their mouth in front of a camera by telling them the wonderful benefits that will accrue from this exposure.
Right. So let me tell you the anecdote of my first time on your show.
Okay.
I'd never been on television. I didn't know what we did or what you did or anything. I just showed up. And as I was waiting in the lobby and a woman came to get me, it was time to come on, I sincerely asked, you know, do we do makeup or I don't know what you
My
do.
My goodness, yeah.
Yeah, and she said, no, we don't do that. And so then I guess, I don't know, I was somewhat relieved, and I said, oh, well, gee, I thought you were going to make me look like George Clooney. And she turned around and looked at me. She said, honey, we don't have that much time.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think I have a face made for radio.
Oh,
so
yeah, I think that too. I think the same thing about myself. You know, this is funny because sometimes people will show up, you know, and they're artists, and it's, you know, it is a, as we say, wine country casual, and they'll
mm-hmm.
say, oh, I didn't know my feet would show. So they worn some funky shoes or mismatched socks or something.
Yeah.
So at one point I put together a little list of pointers. You know, I think if your head is shiny, you're bald and your head is shiny,
mm-hmm.
you might want to powder it. You know,
mm-hmm.
you might want to think about not wearing your glasses. Trust me, big white loud prints do make you look heavier. The camera
mm-hmm.
does add, oh, I'd say 50 or 60 pounds at least, and, you know, 20 or 30 years, because really, you know, we're all young and beautiful.
Yeah.
It's that darn camera that's so pesky.
In our own mind.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's an advantage of radio, is it's almost, in a way, it's not quite as threatening. You know, it's, people won't really see you, so maybe you'll have better luck.
Well, I, you know, kind of combining the two topics, I have asked a couple of people to come on the show and see if I could interview them, and they're so reluctant. And I've
That's
said,
crazy.
It's really, yeah, it's like, you know, we chat, and it's just like calling a friend, but I haven't convinced everybody yet.
You know, I'll tell you something. This is interesting because you asked me about, you know, an affinity for doing this work. And as I'm sitting here talking to you, I'll tell you that when I did first move to Oregon, I had been working at the wholesale flower market in San Francisco, which was a fabulous job, and it kept me really thin because I was physically fit, a lot of moving around. Well, I moved to Oregon, and I took a desk job, so to speak, immediately gained a bunch of weight, but I was doing sales, and we sold flowers to wholesale florists and grocery stores all over the country, shipping, you know, huge box lots of daffodils to Safeway and Ralph's and, you know, Piggly Wiggly's and all that sort of thing. But I developed relationships with people that I actually never met in person. I would talk
sure.
to them three times a week, you know, made friends. And what I realized is, honestly, it's the way blind people make friends. If you can't see somebody, you know, you miss those visual cues, but you hear their voice and you start to read body language into the voice, and you can tell if they're
mm-hmm.
sitting up straight, you can tell if they're slouched over, you can tell if they're exhausted. And, you know, so maybe it's that whole thing of just learning how to read people, I guess, and sort of that as you'd say as a writer, that close reading of something, whether it's an individual or a work, that makes you, you know, kind of like feel your way into where they really want to come from or where they really want to go.
Mm-hmm.
In a conversation.
Well, and I think take that a step further as technology advances. You've got telecommuters.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So you're at home, and your cubicle mate maybe is, you know, six states over.
Right,
and,
exactly.
But I think they and by email they do that same thing, or by conference call, and of
right.
course to some extent Skype now. But
worst. Though. There's nothing worse than those webcams. Everybody looks green with a double chin. You know, oh God.
You know, the scary thing is I look like that when you take the camera away.
Oh, you do not. You're a handsome thing.
Oh well. I wanted to ask you, you talked about being an artist, and I know that you are. You had actually, there was something in town, wasn't it all fired up? There was a kind of a pottery place or something, and there was a contest where people did clocks, I believe. The face
of
clocks.
What it was, this was years ago. We did it as a fundraiser for the Arts Alliance of Yam Hill County, and they gave everybody a white china clock to paint, and then we auctioned them off. Right.
Well, I remember yours, and I thought it was terrific. Yeah. So.
Well, thank you.
I know that you're a painter.
No. Actually, my tutor on that was Jackie Faulkner Schrader. She basically guided me every step of the way, so I have to give her all the credit for the cute clock.
Okay, yeah. Well, I saw the end product, and I thought it was great.
Well, thanks. I'll tell you what I do love to do, and there's a really fabulously talented woman, you know her, Maxine Kurtzbein, and she's a silk painter, and she's been doing it for literally decades. I mean, she's an artist, you know, in her prime, in her later years, but gosh, she's good, and I have really loved silk painting, and that's something that sometimes I wake up and think, I think that's what I really want to do, you know, my sort of next step creatively, because I like the idea of doing garments, you know, jackets and dresses and things like that, not just scarves, but, you know, pieces of clothing that people can wear that are beautifully painted silk. So, yeah, it's a fascinating medium, really, to me.
We have a lady in town as well who is a china painter, and I wish I could remember her name. She's an elderly lady, but really in that community, known throughout the country and I think even throughout the world. And she has pieces, oh my goodness, I think at the Johnson Museum, maybe, was commissioned to do that. And so again, just to discover these people who are... Mm-hmm. You know, you could pass on the street and not know, but they have some real talent. So, Linda, but I wanted to ask you about writing as well, because you do some writing, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I've done some articles over the years, probably even longer than I've actually worked on the television show. Before I did that, I was writing articles for the Arts Alliance newsletter back in the early, mid-90s, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Once in a while I do a viewpoints article for the paper, some little occasional piece, and try to make it, you know, sort of lighthearted and amusing to take a break from the real serious issues that certainly do warrant those serious conversations, but I'm not conversant enough on, so I'll just write something fun and lighten it up a little bit once in a while.
I remember seeing you narrating, I think it was the Alien Day Parade.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I was thinking about, you know, the Rose Parade and the announcers on the Rose Parade. You look so professional.
Well, you know, this is interesting because McMinnville actually has the largest UFO celebration outside of Roswell, New Mexico.
And
this came about because in 1950, a farmer and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Trent, at the Trent Farm in Yam Hill, spotted a flying saucer. He managed to snag a picture of it, and the News Register has preserved that all these years. And when McMinniman's, a Northwest chain of pubs, restaurants, came to town, each time they get a property, they like to fasten on some local, you know, something interesting that they can kind of theme their restaurant around in that town. And they picked the UFO thing from the Trent Farm, and so we got the UFO parade and celebration.
I was in town about 2 days or 3 days maybe when I went to my first UFO parade, and I remember looking at dogs wrapped in aluminum foil, and people with you know, funny glasses and things on their head. And here the mayor was in some kind of an open car coming down Third Street, and the mayor is a plumber, and I thought, I'm home. This and in fact, I remember my description to somebody back in California. I said, the place is charmingly unsophisticated.
Mm-hmm, I'll say that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, there's nothing sophisticated about that UFO parade.
No, they walk down the street and then they go home.
Or they paint themselves up with tin foil and green legs and, you know, go drink green cocktails and have a good time, yeah.
Right. Now, that's something I could get behind.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, the green cocktails. Well, again, back to your show, one of the things that I wondered about, and I have a little inside information on this, but have you had either any sort of on-air tragedies, or do you get the person who you ask some sort of a complicated question and the answer is a one-word answer, and you just have to drag the interview out of them?
You know, the general public watching my show has probably been forced to learn more useless trivia about my life than anybody should have to know, because when I get the guest that simply just won't respond, or, you know, ate Elmer's glue right before they came to the show, I've had to trot out anecdotes about when my brother and I took music lessons back in the 70s, or, you know, some of my early experiments with clay when I was in elementary school. And, yeah, I've had to tell some stories on myself simply as a way to just kind of keep things moving a bit. But, yes, it does happen. It does happen. And, you know, of course, you always want to say, ask the open-ended question. But sometimes people are just so tongue-tied that they can actually turn an open-ended question into, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, actually, I remember an occasion when I was on the show with a couple of other guests, and one of the young ladies was like that. And I think she was concentrating on maybe the potential audience. I don't know. But in any case, you asked the question, and just it was just quiet.
Yeah.
We didn't go. And, of course, being the professional that you are, you saved the day. But,
you know, and sometimes you want to say, okay, we're going to have a moment of silence now.
Yeah,
well, our guest, you know, it's fine. So you know what? It's always fine, and that's the thing. This is, you know, it's not NBC. There's no pressure. It's really just people having a conversation in a community, and if it goes well, or if it, sometimes people will say at the end, "Oh gosh, you know, I felt bad. Once I got warmed up, I had plenty to say," and you know, and that's just the way it goes. That's life. So, you know, it's. One take and you're out of there, but I always tell people, hey, you can come back anytime. You know, I'd love to have you again. So,
yeah. I think the way I approach it, I think it was Jim Carrey, maybe, who was asked about making a flop. And yeah, you know, how embarrassing is that? And he said, well, by definition, if it's a flop, nobody's watching.
Exactly.
And in the case of
Jim Carrey, he's still getting his millions anyway, so he can laugh all the way to the bank.
Yeah. It would take me months to make what he makes in a film.
Well, yeah, it would take me, gosh, hours.
Hours, yeah.
I'm kidding. Oh, my gosh. Lifetimes, more likely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
For what is it now, $20 million a picture?
I don't even know.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Well, you and I are going to continue our conversation later because I wanted to mention you are also a travel agent.
Oh, that's true. Yes, I am.
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, it's kind of an encore career, shall we say, when my hands became arthritic and I could no longer do flowers. I had to think of something else I could do, and this is interesting because I've done, you know, so many different things, event coordination. I worked at a domestic and sexual violence advocacy center, did a lot of training there and wrote grants and did, you know, volunteer development. And all of those things really work well as a travel agent, because you have to be a little bit of everything, you know, a little psychology, a little sales, a little this, a little that. And I really love that. And people say, well, why use a travel agent when, you know, when I can book it myself on the internet? And I guess I would say this, that, you know, travel's actually supposed to be fun. And if you talk to a lot of people about the experiences they've had planning and executing their own travel or vacations, it's sort of this unending tangle of, you know, missed connections and dropped flights. And you know, and everything can happen whether you have a travel agent or whether you don't. But when you use a travel agent, you have somebody there on the other end of the phone. You know, you have the benefit of someone's expertise. You have the benefit of somebody's knowledge. You have the benefit of somebody's guidance. And you also have somebody to call if you need help of any kind. So that's, you know, it's kind of a nice thing.
Like an advocate.
Yeah, exactly. You have an advocate.
Side.
That's exactly right.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, Linda, well, I am off to the one of the Terroir meetings, Terroir Creative Writing Festival.
Okay.
We're putting that together again for later this year.
Okay.
So I'm going to let you go for now.
All right.
I wanted to remind folks, StephenWLong.com. There's a somebody is the search on Facebook. And what's your travel agency has a website?
My travel agency is www.festivetravelpartner.com.
Okay.
Okay.
So anybody that needs some travel help, Linda's your girl. Linda, thank you so much. This was
thank
just
you.
Great.
Thank you very much,
fun,
Steve.
Fun to turn the tables on you a little bit.
It's been my pleasure.
Okay, we'll talk later.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now.